Welcome to episode 132 of the Geocaching Podcast, December Cacher Coffee, recorded live on December 1st, 2009. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444 and our Talkcast ID is 7525. You can join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We have a voicemail line, which can be found at 206-350-3GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. This episode of the Geocaching Podcast is sponsored by Cache Advance. Visit cache-advanced.com for all of your caching needs. Daryl, welcome back to the show. It's December already.
I know, it's amazing. It's December. We had our... some of us had a long weekend. I just had one day off, and I think you did too.
Yeah, I did. I had to work Friday.
Yeah, you know, it always makes the Thanksgiving holiday much less enjoyable when you have to take a day off, go back to work, and then you have the weekend.
Yeah, it was weird because Friday for me felt a little bit like a Monday almost because I had a day off, but then I got another weekend. It was just strange.
Yeah, and I had a bad case of senioritis. I really didn't want to be in the office.
I didn't either.
And I wasn't actually feeling that well either. So it was like, I'm not feeling 100%. I don't want to be here. I should be out, you know, going caching with the rest of the guys I know.
It was a nice day. And I mean, luckily for us, it was kind of a down day. I did a bunch of upgrades to Windows 7. So for the people who weren't there. So for me, it was kind of a light day.
Well, that's good. We actually did get out a couple of hours early, but I pretty much went home and didn't do a whole lot. Got ready to go out to Dree's parents' place in Akron, which was, you know, it's nice to go out. But again, I just wasn't really feeling up to it. We got one cache on the way to their place, but there's not any caches left on the turnpike between Toledo and Akron that we haven't had. So that whole 4 hours, you know, we just don't really have anything to get anymore. So we need the caches in that area to please place more caches for us so we have something to hit at those service centers.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. The weekend was fun, though, you know, aside from hanging out with her parents, and we did do a couple of caches with them. Dree didn't get up until like 9 a.m. or so, I think. No, it was like 8:30. So I took a look at the iPhone because I was up at 6 as usual. And there were a whole bunch of caches around the hotel, so I got out for 8 finds before Dree even woke up, you know, thanks to all the parking grabs. You know, the one thing that I do miss is during that Saturday, while we were driving down, Team Legend 4 was heading out for their 5,000th find on a really, really challenging cache up here. So I would have loved to have gone along and, you know, played with the iPhone video maybe and put together a quick little video on them getting their 5,000th find.
Yeah, Thanksgiving for us was good. We went down to my parents' house and we tried to find a cache, but it was raining that day. And the funny thing is my brother-in-law, who doesn't really cache, he's been a few times with me, but wanted to go out and find it. And so we took our kids. I said, hey, Steve, let's go get our kids. It'll look less muggly if, you know, bad if we're hanging around this built place where the cache is at and with the kids. But it was like really cold and kind of raining a little bit, but we didn't end up finding the cache. We did go frisbee golfing, which is a lot of fun. But hopefully, you know, we had a good time, so that was good. But no caching for us.
Yeah, but you know, kids are probably the best. Maybe dogs are a little bit better, but you know, the best muggle deception that you can have, you know, hey kids, go, you know, cause a distraction over there and we'll go look for the cache.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're tiny. You can go in there and find it.
Exactly. And I didn't feel too strange standing around the library. I mean, the library was closed, but the kids, you know, were kind of a distraction for everybody. It was kind of funny though, because Eli, we got in the car and I said, I bet you're cold. And he said, I'm freezing. So yeah, it was definitely
It was
cold.
Not a warm Saturday out here. I don't know what it was like for you, but out in it was out in Akron. It was kind of cold and icky on Saturday.
Yeah, it was definitely not the best weather here.
Well, and driving back from Akron on Sunday, you know, we spent till about 2 o'clock ish down in Akron, and it was gorgeous. but I'm watching the weather radar with this icy, wet weather coming in. And I'm just thinking, you know, every time we have to drive back from her parents' place, we always seem to get hit by some kind of icky, snowy, slippery weather. And I was just not looking forward to that drive home.
Yeah, definitely. It was one of those weekends. But today was extremely nice here, and I had to work and couldn't cash. And by the time I got off, it was dark. So, well, I guess that's winter.
You know, that's
for
the problem. You go to work in the dark, and you come home in the dark. When are you ever going to get out and have any fun?
And then on Saturdays, there's so much other stuff that you have to get done around the house.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I'm hoping to go out and do some shooting, because I just got myself a new toy, a long time wish ever since I've gotten the D700 was a 70 to 200 millimeter lens, replacing the old one that I have, because unfortunately the one that I had was built before they had full frame digital cameras and didn't work very well on the new full frame digital. So they finally came out with it. I finally picked it up today. So now I'm like really itching to get out there and shoot with it. Yeah, well, and we're planning on doing something on Saturday. It's a matter of figuring out where, when, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, before we get into the topic tonight, which is our cash or coffee, let's explain that a little bit. What it's going to be is it's going to be kind of like as if you were sitting around a coffee shop with some of your closest friends, except for this time you're not sitting at the coffee shop, you're sitting over the internet. We're just going to go ahead and talk about whatever open topic. There's not really a set topic tonight, but first, let's go ahead and hear the geocaching question of the day.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the bad cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Recently, I've asked the question, have you found a geocache at night with only the light from your cell phone or GPS? A whopping 70% answered yes to this question, me included. I can tell you, I've missed many an easy find in the dark, only to find it quickly the next day in the light of day. So tell me, have you found a geocache at night with only the light from your cell phone or GPS? Want to find out more? Follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
So if you want to participate in our show tonight, please call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Today, I will go ahead and open up everybody on the line who calls in, no muting. So we're going to be talking anything caching. I want to go ahead and kick it off here with the geocaching question of the day. I want to answer that. I have not found a cache at night with only the light of my cell phone. I have found caches at night, but it was a first to find it, and I was lucky enough to actually grab my flashlight before I got out of the house. So for me, I didn't need the light of my cell phone, only the light of my cell phone, to find that cache. Daryl, how about yourself?
Well, you know, I always have a bunch of flashlights in the car. So anytime we go out, if it looks like it might be a longer hike or, you know, out a little past dark, we always grab it just so that when we get to ground zero, we have a little extra light, you know, to shine. And you know, when you get toward that twilight time of day, it's so hard to see in the shadows anyway that we just always have the flashlights with us.
Now, one of the things that I've really come to love, and I've not used it with caching yet, but I have a couple of those LED headlamps, and I'm really excited to get to use them at night with caching because it's been amazing. I've actually replaced all of my, I won't want to say replace because I still have them, but normal traditional flashlights. Every time I get a chance to throw the headlamp on, I do it because it's hands-free. Anywhere you're looking, it's definitely one of those cool things to have. I mean, they're super bright too.
Yeah, you know, I've got one of the, Dree and I each have our own headlamp, and we barely ever use them because it's just a little bit extra, and so rarely do we actually use our flashlights. But when we do, you know, I've got one of the big speed streams that I think I've mentioned on this show a couple of times that really, actually maybe it wasn't, it's Streamlight, Which actually has a lot more power. It has the UV, which I find very helpful when we get into the ground zero range, because the UV at the, let's see, it would be the higher end of the spectrum, I believe, because there's two different UV lights on it. But the higher end UV lights do a pretty good job of illuminating. Stuff that's been touched does tend to light up a little bit, but I find that the regular flashlight, the shadows end up being so harsh that I miss stuff. So the UV I like a lot better because it's more subtle. It still gives me enough light to see stuff and really does help a lot.
Now, anyone else? Again, this is going to be an open forum here. If you want to participate in the show tonight, definitely give us a call, 724-444-7444. And the TalkCast ID is 7525. Now, Daryl, with the talking about winter and the daylight being short, what it is definitely getting winter out. I know, in at least in our area, winter means cold and frozen. It's a good time to get out there and also do your check your caches out. Get pre-winter checks. I know that it's a good thing. I don't always do them, but what are some of the things that we can look for? I know that, you know, what do you look for when you're doing a pre-winter check? I mean, I would say definitely take some extra paper out with you, anything that you're going to do normally, but I guess it's just a good time to get out there and check them.
Yeah, you want to do that seasonal maintenance that we've talked about many times before. You know, go out, make sure the container's in good order, make sure that you have a fresh logbook with enough space if you're not going to need to replace it. Yeah, and certainly don't replace a logbook that's only half full, that's been out for, you know, a year or so, because there's plenty of logbook left to go around. But check, you know, make sure you don't have any, damaged toys or, you know, junk in there. If you've had travelers that have been sitting for a while, make sure to pick those up and get them moving. You know, especially if it's a harder cache, you'll find that most of those don't get hit in the winter as often as they do in the summer. Although in some areas like Florida, that might be the exact opposite, you know, or you're going to have more people hit into the winter. But again, if you're going to have something that's a little bit more challenging cache that people aren't going to hit, or, you know, if it's been sitting for a really long time, you know, move that trackable, make sure that the owner knows it at least exists, even if you're not going to move it. It's always a nice thing to do. But for those of us up in the northern parts of the world here, where you get snow, you got to kind of watch and make sure that those caches are still watertight and will withstand the freezing. So if you have something like a plastic container, chances are that's not going to withstand the freeze and thaw very well. So you're either going to have to replace that at some point, or maybe you just disable it and replace it next year. And make sure that if you do get a lot of snow, that it's, you know, not going to be buried and no one can find the cache. Or if it is, you know, make sure there's some kind of indication of that on the cache page that it may not be accessible when you have heavy snow.
Yeah, that is
also another thing to check for, is make sure it doesn't have anything that can freeze some sort of liquid like water or bubbles or something.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Things that are freeze are, like I say, like Paul said, if you have bubbles in there, they may break and the container may come open inside. Then when it thaws, you've got a really icky mess. So that's one of the things you want to check for too.
Yeah, and that's a lot of that is just part of that regular seasonal maintenance. Yeah, and you'll find that in this area, we have a lot more problems with the logs getting damp and wet because of the condensation. So even if you have a nice watertight container, if there's nothing to absorb the moisture, then those logs will end up getting wet as it cools down and that humidity starts condensing. So it's definitely worth just checking and making sure that your log is still nice and dry. And if you do have problems with that in your cache, it might be worth looking into getting some silica packets and putting those in your cache to help grab that moisture and keep it from happening the next time.
Well, and another good thing too, and Cache Advance brings this up, is that a lot of times we want to bring pencils to place in the caches, because when the pens get cold, a lot of times they don't work below freezing. So if you've got cheap old pens, go ahead and make sure you put them in, put pencils in there so that people can still sign it during the winter.
Yeah, and that's kind of a good point about the pens, period. Even if you have a pen with you that you're using, like the space pens work very well in low temperatures, but I found that they tend to start globbing as it gets closer to freezing. So one of the things that works very well is to actually keep it inside your jacket so that it will stay a little bit warmer and you know, not have as many issues.
Anyone else? Any other topics that anyone wants to cover? Go ahead and bring them up. 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 752. I'm going to bring that 7525. I am going to bring that up a lot tonight because this is a open forum. Anyone that wants to jump in can jump in. Anyone who's on the phone call right now, go ahead and if you want to shoot out a topic, go ahead and do that so that we can get some more topics here for our listeners.
Well, I do want to bring up something about the new geocaching iPhone app version 3 that just came out. And it, you know, I love that app. It's great for the canyon caching that I did this weekend where it's like, gee, you know, I wasn't planning on doing any caching. I don't have a GPS or anything with me, but, you know, I'm going to go, you know, waste some time finding some caches. And there's been a lot of discussion recently with this new geocaching 3 app that it's gotten a little bit slow and laggy on a lot of phones, including the 3GS, which is what I'm using. And there's been some speculation that it's because of the caching of the maps and the photos. So if you are using that and do run into these slow issues, that's normal as far as we can tell. There is a version 1.3, from what I understand, that it was already submitted even before version 3 was approved. So they may have addressed some of those issues in version 3.1. It may take 3.1.1 or 3.2 to fix the issues. And it might just be that we just have to kind of deal with it to get the caching happening. But the caching is very nice because you don't have to constantly hit the network and download all those maps all the time.
I do agree. Especially coming from an iPod Touch, where I have an iPod Touch, that's for me an amazing thing. I use that for this weekend. I had downloaded the aerial map of the cache we were going to hit, and I could, in the field, look and see the map, even though I don't have any internet connectivity at all. It was awesome. I didn't really see any different slowness than with the previous versions before that. The only thing I've really noticed is that, and this is on previous versions too, is the when I type in a GC code to search for it and I have in my pocket queries, sometimes that takes it 30 seconds to find the cache, even though it's, you know, it is in my pocket query there.
Yeah, and there have been some issues, I guess, with the pocket queries that I haven't run into, but the main slowdowns that we've seen are accessing the list, and the one that really was driving me nuts is I like using the view results on a map, and as it's dropping those pins onto the map, it would just hang for a good 2-3 seconds at one point or another. I had a couple of times where the screen actually stopped responding, and that was really annoying. I had to drop out and go all the way back out to Springboard and back in. So there's definitely some issues with 3.0, you know, as there are with most major new releases. So, you know, we're looking forward to the 3.1 to be released, but you know, it's going to be a little while because Apple is not very responsive with getting these updates out to the store.
Now, we have someone in the chat room had kind of brought up anyone working on any new caches, anything different that we have not seen before. I've got an awesome idea. I've not been able to implement it yet. I've been doing some searching on it. I don't know. I know you probably have seen this before, but the augmented reality that's kind of coming to mainstream now, where you have what they call a marker, some sort of printed paper, and you hold it in front of your webcam, and a 3D image pops out, and you can kind of rotate around that image, and it's all really, really cool. Takes a lot of planning and a lot of programming to get it taken care of and get it done. I'm planning on using augmented reality in some sort of a cache.
Well, that'd be pretty cool. And there's actually a couple of different types of augmented reality, which we should probably mention. I think we've talked a little bit on the show about the applications like Layer, which allow you to use the camera in the phone with a compass and do like a real life overlay, putting labels on, you know, buildings or whatnot. You know, there's an apartment for rent here. You know, this historical thing happened here, you know, 4 miles to in this direction to the closest Taco Bell, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the site that you're talking about, which uses your webcam to take a symbol and then use that to map this three-dimensional figure usually to it. And there's some really cool demonstrations of that. The one that really got me interested was one from General Electric on their smart grid. And
yeah, that one was cool.
Just amazing.
That one was definitely cool.
Actually, there's another one out here that now that I've heard about that kind of intrigues me. And that is using the custom maps that some of the newer Garmin units support, where you can create your own fantasy area in an open playing field and work a Where I Go that uses that custom map.
Yeah, that's a good point, Geek Boy, is with that custom map functionality, there are some really cool things to be had, but unfortunately, Where I Go doesn't really allow you to have that map functionality. But if you were to do something even with like caches, you know, here's your waypoints, you know, do a like letterbox hybrid kind of thing. I could see that being very, very cool. And I've actually thought about doing that myself.
The only problem there is you limit your target because of the custom map feature. But yeah.
Yeah. But how much are you really going to want to do with that? My guess is you're probably going to want to stay within a park anyway. And, you know, the limits of the custom map function should easily deal with a park. And there are ways around some of those limits, too.
Yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of you limit your audience to people who have a Garmin unit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But if you're doing it as a letterbox, conceivably you could do it as a just printed version of it as well. And then by that point, you know, you don't really need to have the custom app, but if you want it, it's a nice add-on.
True,
yeah,
true.
I think for my idea of the augmented reality, as far as doing a cache, I'd probably do a mystery cache and then have the webcam pop up the coordinates or some sort of a puzzle, something with that you have to kind of figure out to do that.
Now, I happen to notice that someone else has popped on the line that we haven't seen in a while. Hey, Montu, welcome back.
It's good to be back. Been a busy, busy couple of weeks.
Well, hopefully things have kind of ironed themselves out.
Yep. Even got captured by the Nazis.
Oh, yeah?
There's a train museum that we went to a couple weekends ago down in Parrish, Florida. There's even a geocache there on the front of one of the trains. And they were doing a World War II reenactment where the Nazis took over the train. And a couple people didn't have the proper papers, so they took them off the train and were about to shoot them at a firing squad, but the Allies happened to storm the train right at that time, so we got spared.
Sounds fun.
That sounds like an interesting exhibit.
Yes, it was. You know, it was about about an hour's ride on the train. As we went along, they stopped for an Allied paratrooper who had happened to drop right by the tracks and captured him. And then we went a little ways further, and that's where they hauled everybody off who didn't have the proper papers and put them in front of a firing squad. And just as they were about to fire, here comes the Allies. And then the Allies take the train and back to the station we go. But it was definitely exciting. We got a couple of caches there while we were at that. And we've even finally gotten our event cache published for this year for anybody that's heading down to Florida for around Christmas time. GC21090, the fourth annual Starkey Park Geo event. This thing keeps growing each year, and it's already looking pretty good. We've already got almost 20 attendees on it right now, but still being a month away, I know it's going to pick up as we get closer to the event. But it's always wound up being a good one, so we're looking forward to that. Wound up running into a couple of our listeners. they made it a point of finding me an event I was recently at. So that's always nice running into people that listen to the podcast. But other than that, it's been same old, same old, pretty much.
Well, it sounds like a fairly busy few weeks for you.
Definitely.
Now, I see a lot of... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Daryl.
I was going to say now, I see a lot of chatting in the talk or the chat room here about where I go and if anyone has done that. But Montu, I think you said in the chat room there that you were planning an interesting cache.
Yeah, it's one. It's actually going to cover quite a few miles of hiking. It's still in the works phase. I've got to build a couple of the containers. I've hinted at this to you two. I don't think we've put it on the podcast yet, but it's going to take a little bit of history. You're going to have to do a little bit of research. It is going to be with the changes on the rules, it's probably going to have to be converted back to a multi-cache instead of a puzzle. But you're going to need to research a couple of important documents in our history to find some clues as to how to get this thing open.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun there. You know, now, Andy, you're saying in the chat room, too, that where I go is a lot easier than augmented reality. Yeah, I can't imagine the difference.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, anyone who's looked at programming for the where I go, it's fairly simple, but there's still a lot to learn about it. But definitely the you have to learn, you have to know how to do like 3D modeling and Flash and all sorts of other stuff that I'm just learning. So it's definitely a lot harder, but hopefully sometime soon you guys can see my cache. Hopefully it has augmented reality.
Yeah. And you know, one of the problems with where I go is that there are really so few devices that can play it. And a lot of the devices still have issues playing it. So you know, where I go is very cool. I enjoyed the ones that I've done, but it is not for the faint of heart yet.
Yeah, I've done a couple where I goes, but unfortunately, that was used borrowing people's Colorado or PC.
Oregon?
PDA to do it. But otherwise, I don't do them. I do have a couple underneath me and my DeLorean PN40 can't do to where I go.
No, and a lot of people are surprised to find out that the Dakota doesn't do where I go either, so it's only the Oregon and the Colorado that support where I go.
Now, some of the things that you can do, and I've tried this with one or two of them, is actually take it into the builder, and unless it's protected, you can bring it into the builder and kind of use the emulator and kind of kind of figure it out like that. Some may call that cheating, but it does work on some caches too. Now,
yeah, and I've actually talked to a few people who have taken laptops with a data connection into the builder and, you know, run around with that trying to do it live in the field. And seems like a lot of hardware, but you've got like these netbooks now, and some of them even come with GPSs. You know, maybe it's a good idea to build a desktop version of it because you have some nice small portable devices out there that can run it.
True, true.
I still say that's ouch.
Yeah.
Make one little mistake out there, that'll be big time ouch.
Now,
I know I just found a new spot to put a cache out on my one trail where I have like four caches. Just going down there this time, which is like my seventh time going down the trail, I found a nice spot to put one, which I never saw before. So hopefully I'll have one out here shortly, but I go for the simple caches, not the fancy ones like that.
Now, Head Hard Hat has also asked if anyone's taken like an overnight trip just to hit a single cache. I know I haven't done that. Daryl, Paul, anyone else, Montu on the phone, who taken a single trip just to make one cache or just to find one cache?
No, I haven't, but... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, well, me and a group together, we call it Bacon Butler Area Caches. There's another group, some of my friends I go out with. we did a trip up to Rochester to get my 1,000 cash, which was the GPS maze. Now, of course, we picked up caches on the way there and back, but the reason for a trip was for me to get my 1,000 cash at the maze. So I don't know if that counts, but that's what we did.
Yeah, that's kind of what we ended up doing is there have been a couple of events that we've actually made the trip to the event to do, and then, you know, the caches around it. So it's not for one event, but, or, you know, for one cache even, but for events, yeah, we've made trips for the events.
Now, we had mentioned the iPod GPS attachment thing last week, and I'm really looking forward to hopefully getting a chance to get my hands on it and try it out. It's one of those things I think would be really cool, especially it may not be the cheapest option for it. It, you know, you may be able to buy a dedicated handheld for that same price, but it's definitely an option if you want to cache with your iPod. So I'm looking.
Well, and one of the things to look at with that is it's what do we say, 150-ish bucks, I think, for the unit. You get a 8-gig iPod Touch. You're at roughly $350, and even the cheap little Dakota 20 is about the $350 price range. So, you know, it is getting into that price range of being an affordable GPS almost. But yeah, it is a little bit pricey for, you know, something that's not a dedicated hardened unit, and I am a little bit afraid of that.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully we get a chance to take a look at it and do a review on it. If we do, we'll definitely be bringing the information to you. Daryl, anything?
Yeah, and that it was a cool unit because it actually had the batteries in there, so it's going to give you that little extra battery life that you don't get with just using something like the iPhone. And I don't know. I really want to see this thing and you know, try it out, but I think it could be an excellent choice for geocaches.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if we ever do get the Where I Go player for the iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm sure it would probably work with that as well, and what a great combination that would be.
Definitely, definitely.
I think they need to get out the Where I Go player for a lot more units than just what they have out now. That would help spread it around as well as making it easier to program them.
Yeah, they definitely need a improved builder to make it easier to build them. But, you know, we've seen a lot of the people in this area, at least, picking up caching from the iPhone. You know, a lot of the times they still end up going and buying in a whole other unit. But I really think that there might be something to that. You know, if you build it for the iPhone, if you build it for the Android platform, which, you know, we said last week they're trying to build the geocaching app for the Android. But, you know, if you can build it for a lot of these popular platforms, you know, the BlackBerry would be awesome as well. You know, suddenly you've just opened up the field and you know, all of these other people can now play, which right now can't.
True.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, if I'm going to build a Where I Go cache in this area, there's like 5 teams in the area that would probably go find it. That's it. Do I want to put all that time and effort into 5 teams being able to find it? Not really, and that's one of the reasons why that's gone on the back burner, and I haven't done my Where I Go cache that I've been planning on doing for probably about a year and a half now.
Yeah, in our area, if a Where I Go is published, we actually had one that was published on a Wednesday that sat until the following Saturday when ClickTrick and I got out to get the first to find on it.
Wow.
I don't
in an area
one
where first to find hide, a normal hide, goes in under an hour.
Yeah, it's just not the same level of participation yet because of that barrier to a device that will allow you to play.
Yeah, there isn't even one anywhere near me. The ones I've done was up in Rochester at the museum where the GPS maze was, and one out of the Midwest Geobash, which was set up just on the fairgrounds where the bash was held.
Yeah, I know that they've been talking earlier about getting more devices to play it on, and I'm really hoping we're going to see that.
Yeah, that would definitely be nice.
Yeah, I agree there. It'd definitely be nicer if they could make somehow go back in and do a firmware update or something to make a lot of these older units compatible with it, because so many people don't want to spend the money on getting an upgrade and buying that Colorado or Oregon or any of the others.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, I think they're not going to be able to go back to a lot of those older units because the requirements for both processor and video are so high. And even like the Oregon and the Colorado don't support the audio. You have to have the Windows Mobile version to support the audio.
All right, well, I think that is going to close out our Cash or Coffee tonight. Thank you guys for subscribing to the podcast. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. You can call our voicemail line, which is 206-350-3GPS, anytime and leave us a voicemail. We love to hear from our listeners. Have a great week and happy caching.